You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for nearly the last 10 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, UFC 273 goes down this weekend. From Jacksonville, Florida, we're down there at the ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena, the granddaddy of them all. Naturally, yeah, we will spend most of this show breaking down the top three fights on this fight card. You got Alexander Volkanovski putting the men's featherweight title on the line against Chan Sung Jung. You got Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan going to have their men's bantamweight unification battle. And then you got a interesting welterweight contender fight where Gilbert Burns and Khamzat Chimaev are going to be doing the damn thing. To start things off, though, I wanted to pick your brain about this. I looked up the odds here for the for the top three fights on this fight card over at a sports book on the internet that shall remain nameless until they start giving us money. The odds makers don't think any of these three fights are going to be particularly competitive. You got Chan Sung Jung going off right now at plus 525 and Alexander Volkanovski at minus 760. You got Aljamain Sterling, the guy who comes into this fight as the actual champion. He's at plus 350. You got the interim champ and former champ, Peter Yan, going off at minus 475. And then you got the welterweight battle, Gilbert Burns at plus 360 and Khamzat Chimaev at minus 490. So I guess my question for you to open this whole thing up is this a problem for the UFC? Does this, do you think, obviously I think we got a little bit of a lower wattage pay-per-view fight card here compared to the last few as it stands. Does it hurt things even more that the so-called experts are looking at these three fights and saying none of these three marquee fights will be competitive?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a big problem if you're the UFC, because this is one of those that you're selling the aggregate value. You're not selling one big fight, you know? Yeah, and it's not a bad lineup to be doing that with, because you come in here and you say, we got two title fights, including one that's going to settle some unfinished business. And then we got this guy that we've been telling you is the best thing since sliced bread, and he's going to finally get a really big test in the division that's going to help you figure out if that's true. So those three together, even if the odds makers are looking at them and saying, we feel like we know which way all of these are going, I think it still holds enough appeal for fans just to get in there and say, look, we've been surprised before. Odds makers been surprised before. And when you've got three different fights on a five-fight main card pay-per-view portion, that's enough for most people, I think, especially in the Just Some Fights era where we're used to, okay, hey, we'll tune in for these fight nights. Maybe they got something, maybe they don't. Maybe we only care about the main event. And then you roll up in here where, all right, you got a pretty good main card where there's a different sort of appeal going on in every single fight. That's enough, I feel, especially after you took last weekend off, gave everybody a little bit of a chance to miss you. You know what I mean?
A little bit of a breather. We don't spend a lot of time on this show talking about gambling, but can I lay some of these specials on you? You got some specials here that you could take advantage of over at this nameless online sports book that rhymes with craft rings.
Hey, don't do that. Listen, if they want the CME bump, they got to come and pay for the CME bump like everybody else. I mean, everybody knows we've been having a lot of fun with our $20 We Never Want to See Again segment over on Friday's Power Hour. A lot of the co-maniacs out there have been getting on board with us, throwing their bets up in the CME Discord, everybody having a good time. But you know what? If you want to dance, you got to pay the band. Don't help them out.
You go out to a nice
restaurant.
No
free ones.
You look. You might. The waiter comes to the table. He says, "Would you like a starter?" And you say, "Yeah, give me the Kraft rings. I'd love to get an order of the Kraft rings if I could." Just because of $20, I never want to see again on Fridays, that I love to name my parlays.
We all know that by now. Yes. Well,
turns out they do the same thing with the specials over on this sports book, online sports book that shall remain nameless. They got one here called the Who Let the Dogs Out.
Okay.
You can get plus 13,000 if you bet Chan Sung Jung, Aljamain Sterling, and Gilbert Burns all to win.
Wow.
You can get, they got one here called the Undefeated Parlay. If you take Khamzat Chimaev, Ian Gary, and Mark O'Madsen all to win, that gets you a relatively pedestrian plus 230.
Okay.
You take all those guys. They got one where you can either bet all the athletes who've trained at Tiger Muay Thai to win. That would be Alexander Volkanovski, Peter Yan, Khamzat Chimaev, all to win by KO, TKO, or DQ. That gets you to plus 1900. And then you got American Top Team. You can take the Biggie Boy, Jarzino Rosenstrike, and Tisha Torres, both to just win straight up. That will get you plus 225. So there's some specials out there, my guy.
I mean, I like that we're doing this. Can we get one where you bet on everybody who's a Virgo or something like that?
They should have one where you can get good odds betting against everyone we picked.
Yes, the anti-CME special.
Mm-hmm. People probably that's win not, a lot of money.
It's not a bad idea, could
win
frankly.
Some, win some people a lot of money. Reminder, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. Don't forget to go out and follow us on Instagram at CME If You Nasty, and like us over on Facebook at facebook.com/co-main event. This show that you're listening to right now, what we like to call the proper, drops every afternoon for free in your timelines and podcast libraries. But if you think we're having fun right now, you absolutely need to check out what's going on over at patreon.com/co-main event. Ben Folks and I are over there party rocking with three additional podcasts every single week. You got the Wednesday live chat, the Thursday doing the damn thing podcast, and then, of course, Friday for the Power Hour, where we get everybody primed and ready to go for the weekend, for the weekend's fights. And this weekend will be no exception down there at UFC 273 in Jacksonville. We got music this week from longtime listener, friend of the show, Ross Jarborg. If you like what you hear from him on this episode, you could check out more over at soundcloud.com/STHLMRoss, which I believe is shorthand for Stockholm Ross.
You know it.
Three rounds as usual this week in the co-main event podcast. In round number one, Chan Sung Jung rolls into Saturday's championship fight with Alexander Volkanovski, just 1-1 in his last two fights dating back to 2019. So what, if anything, can he do to make things interesting? And in round number two, we're doing it again, brother. You just shut up and let me talk. At long last, Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan will hopefully give us an answer as to who is the UFC's top men's bantamweight, just so long as one of them doesn't cheat so bad they literally have to take the title away and give it to somebody else. And in round number three, have you guys heard of this Khamzat Chimaev? Many people are saying he might be kind of good. All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff, but first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
This week, listener mail is brought to you once again by our pals at Fulton and Rourke. The last couple weeks, we've been telling you about all the new stuff that our buddies at Fulton and Rourke have going on with their line of fine men's grooming products. Since the last time we worked together, the dudes at Fulton and Rourke told me they finally did something that their customers have been telling them to do for a while now. They created matching bar soaps and deodorants to coordinate with the scents of their solid fragrances. They did it in a way so that you can layer your fragrance without ever getting overwhelming. You can understand how this would be a problem, right, Ben? If your body wash and your shampoo and your deodorant and your fragrance are all different scents, you could be out here walking around smelling like a damn organic tea shop, right?
Yeah.
You could be smelling like you fell in a Willy Wonka river of various smells and odors. Well, go ahead. I can hear you. You just took a breath. I hear you. I just wanted to say something. I hear you. I heard your intake of breath. What do you got?
One thing that I feel like a lot of people don't realize is that it's a kiss of death if you got your scents warring against one another.
Yeah.
You know, if you're out there and your fragrances are in combat with each other, then you just come off as a person at war with himself, and you don't want that.
Yeah. No, I like the way you said that. I think that's well said. Now, you can coordinate everything. The bar soap, for example, it's the same brick of excellence we've been talking about on this show literally for years, but now it's available in 8 different scents. That is a lot. Tons of cool stuff going on over at Fulton & Rourke. If you want to check it out for yourself, CME listeners can save 15% on their first purchase with the coupon code IFYOUNASTY. All one word. Go over to FultonAndRourke.com to check it out. That is FultonAndRourke.com. First question this week comes from our guy, Donkey Dave.
Well, why wouldn't we start off with a question from Donkey Dave? That's a gimme.
Donkey Dave writes, John Jones says he hasn't been offered a fight by the UFC and has nothing in the pipeline, but plans to be in peak fighting condition by June or July this year. Isn't he kind of giving away any negotiating leverage he had by letting us know that? Perhaps when remember when John Jones wanted the UFC to show him the money in order to fight at heavyweight? Does he think we all just forgot that? Did he? I don't know, Ben. What do you think? Is John Jones tipping his hand here even a little bit more than he already has to say, I don't have a fight offer yet, but I'm going to be ready to go in June or July?
I think that, as I have said many times in the wake of his most recent arrest and life upheaval, John Jones is at least savvy enough to realize that he does not have the negotiating power, the leverage that maybe he thought he did back when he was saying, show me the money to fight at heavyweight, because he abdicated that title at light heavyweight. He changed his body. He moved up a division, and he's done nothing but generate bad headlines for himself outside the cage. And so the UFC realizes, look, we don't need to have a John Jones blockbuster fight in order to continue printing our own money. And they're right about that. They don't need him. They've got themselves this model that works very, very well, and the money is just flowing right in. It'd be nice. It'd be nice if you could have John Jones in a big-ass heavyweight fight sometime this year. It also, though, be real nice for John Jones, who has staked a lot on this eventually happening and who could stand to generate some positive news in the way of winning a damn fight against an actual damn fighter. So I don't know if there's really that much leverage for him to lose anymore. I think that for him to say, like, hey, I'm going to be ready to fight. I've been waiting for that offer to come through. I'm going to be standing by the fax machine doing preacher curls or whatever, getting ready for that heavyweight fight. I don't know I think that that's what him trying to get some interest going on fans and trying to get people excited about the possibility. But I think that he needs to hurry up and get in a fight sometime soon. And I think it's just in the UFC looking around at the heavyweight landscape and being like, what do we want to do here while we're in the big Fran holding period?
Yeah. Yeah. In some ways, I feel like the negotiating with the UFC on a bigger contract ship has already sailed for John Jones, just given the personal problems that he had here. You and I were talking about this on Friday's Power Hour, that it seems somewhat remarkable, though, that it has been at this point over 2 years since we have seen John Jones step into the octagon. And if he's targeting a fight this summer, I can't help but notice that UFC 276, International Fight Week, July 2nd in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena. This is the one where it had been rumored that we were targeting the, I think it's the men's flyweight title again, right? We were going to do Davis and Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno again, brother, the fifth or seventh time, whatever it is between those two guys. Now we don't know that that's going to happen. So you're looking at International Fight Week. I'll tell you that the two officially announced bouts that we have right now for UFC 276, you got they're both women's flyweight fights. You got Jessica Eye versus Casey O'Neill, and you got Misha Tate versus Lauren Murphy. Now, even assuming that we actually get the Brandon Moreno Davey Figs fight back online for this thing, you know that's they're not going to sit pat and just let the flyweights main event International Fight Week on July 2nd. So if you are John Jones and you're looking to get back in the game, this seems like a good opportunity. It's just going to be a matter of who else is available at heavyweight, if that's where you want to have this fight, and then making all the numbers work out. But I mean, I feel like Donkey Dave actually makes a good point here of how far removed it feels like we are at this point from those times when John Jones was basically like, UFC needs to show me the money or I'm walking away. At this point, he feels like he has abdicated all that shit. And he just, he either wants to or needs to fight, and it's going to happen in the summer.
Yeah, and you know what, though? Now is the time, if you're thinking about fighting in July or August and you're looking at maybe that International Fight Week date on July 2nd, now's the time to start getting some balls rolling. Because if you go ahead and you sign something in early April, that gives you plenty of time to get full training camp in. That's about the time where you can get some guys like maybe a John Jones and a Stipe Miocic to get something on the books, agree to something, and everybody feel like they have adequate time to prepare. But if you start waiting for too long, then it just, the prospects get worse and worse.
Next question this week comes to us from the Off-White Power Ranger, who writes, do you think Usman versus McGregor would be a blessing in disguise, considering the byproduct of that most likely means we get Covington versus Chimaev if Khamzat beats Gilbert Burns? I feel like Conor McGregor versus Kamaru Usman is a blessing for Kamaru Usman.
Yeah.
Like he gets a high-profile fight, kind of the kind of fight that champion Kamaru Usman has wanted this whole time. And, you know, Lord willing and the creek don't rise, he probably goes out there and absolutely whips the shit out of Conor McGregor.
Yes.
Now, Conor McGregor, in a similar to John Jones situation, has been making noise about how he will be ready to go this summer. I am looking over at the MMA Junkies, and I see that Nolan King has a story out today. 12 realistic opponents for Conor McGregor's UFC return.
12?
Yeah, 12. I'm just going to...
That's a lot!
I'm just going to read you the names, and you can tell me which one you think is most feasible. Of course, you got Nate Diaz, Michael Chandler, Tony Ferguson, Charles Oliveira, Justin Gaethje, Kamaru Usman, Rafael Dos Anjos, Islam Makhachev.
Wait, Islam Makhachev? Come on, man. Did somebody tell him first that they needed to be 12? Did we start from there and then we work backwards to then fill in the names? Because I don't know, man. I don't know about some of this.
If Islam Makhachev fights Conor McGregor in his next fight, I will take my favorite hat and I will throw it in the river. Robbie Lawler. I'm not even a 12 yet. We're still going. Robbie
Lawler. I didn't think you were going to say throw it in the river.
I will. Toss it in the river. Jorge
Masvidal.
That's
not even that. Okay.
Dustin Poirier. Well, remember when I said I was going to eat my hat last time?
Yeah, that's what I was. I thought that's where we were headed.
Well, I got myself in some trouble. You said I was going to take my favorite hat. Like whatever the thing was, it damn near came to fruition. And, you know, Twitter was never going to let me forget it. They were like, oh, this guy's, he's going to have to eat his hat. And I was like, it's a fucking expression, you guys. It's an idiom. But.
You're going to have to get a doctor's note saying that your personal physician had expressly forbade you from eating that hat.
Still going. Benil Dariush is the last guy on this list. Hey, there's like two guys on here that seem feasible to me. Well, maybe three. Nate Diaz. I mean, he ain't fighting Michael Chandler. He ain't fighting Tony Ferguson. Charles Oliveira, if everybody wants to make some money, maybe. He ain't fighting Justin Gaethje. He's probably not fighting Kamaru Usman, if we're being super honest. And, Jorge Masvidal. Those are the guys that I think are realistic. I guess you could do it again with Dustin Poirier, but Poirier seems like he's moved on, frankly, from that.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that he would just come in and fight one of the champs, lightweight or welterweight, I guess we have seen that the UFC is completely willing to abandon any pretense of earning a title shot when there's enough money to be made in it. But also, if you're Conor McGregor, you have to be thinking that it would be sure nice to get a win right about now, right? The way things have been going the last few years.
I think you would have been thinking that for a while.
Well, I think you're first of all, you're looking around you, and if somebody is like, hey, I got a really good wrestler out here, or somebody who is just big, just like really big and pretty all around good, and you're going, nope, take those guys off the table. What else you got? And I think that the smart move, if you could get it, would be Nate Diaz. because that seems like one of the more winnable fights for him right now. There's already the storyline there with the trilogy. It's already sold well the first two times, all the reasons to think that it's going to sell well the third time. The problem is, you know that if the UFC were going to give Nate Diaz that fight, it would have to probably come with a new UFC contract and not the, hey, I want to hurry up and fight out this contract and get out of this shit kind of attitude that Nate Diaz has been very publicly projecting for the last few weeks now. So that would be the real sticking point. It's like, if you're Conor McGregor, that's the fight you should want. Can the UFC and Nate Diaz come to an understanding to get it done so that it can happen? That's the question.
Next question.
Islam Makhachev is not going to be it, though. I'm going to tell you that right now.
McGregor's not sitting around in his easy chair right now being like, you know what? Give me the Makhachev kid. Give me that guy. Next question this week comes from our guy, Patrick Milder, who writes, it's 2017 and Colby Covington is mostly a forgettable welterweight on a JSF fight night card. He writes into the UFC consulting service to ask how to go about creating a heel gimmick because his weaponized pace and punchable face lends itself better to a heel than a babyface gimmick. What character do you craft him into? This alternate timeline depends on your sage advice. You know what? Some of the stuff that Colby chefed up for himself wasn't bad, you know, like I feel like he could have done some nice things with the sort of, I'm cool and everybody else who doesn't like me are virgins and nerds gimmick. If we could have done that and kept the politics out of it, I feel like Colby Covington would have been real nicely in the wheelhouse of that kind of cocky, arrogant heel that we all hate, and might have been able to do it while preserving some semblance of a personal life, because I think we all would have looked at that and we would have been like, okay, we see what he's doing. He's trying to be Chael Sonnen, and he's trying to be Conor McGregor. He's going about it in a slightly different way. Okay. But then he went ahead and mixed in all the far right political stuff that he does. And all of a sudden you got people trying to fight him in the buffet line at the Las Vegas casino, and you got guys sneaking up on him outside the poppy steak and throwing them hands because he's been talking about their children. I feel like if he could have kept it to like a cool guy, hateable cool guy in sunglasses talking about how we're all nerds and virgins and we don't know anything, that alone might have worked for him.
What I hear you saying is that the advice you would have given him in 2017 from CME Consulting Services LLC is focus. Yeah. Narrow our field of vision here. Let's pick one kind of unified aesthetic, one goal, and let's just focus on that rather than just blasting out in all these different directions, which I think he has only increasingly done. And I think that he's done it because he doesn't understand how the heel gimmick is supposed to work. Especially because when you talk about, like, okay, he got really into the politics and sort of like culture war kind of stuff that's going on in American life these last few years. But he also seemed like at times he was just trying to project bad guy as bad person, meaning like what's the most offensive thing I could say? Let me talk about somebody's family. Let me just talk, like, let me reach for whatever seems like it's a line that has not yet been crossed. Let me purposely cross it. And that's kind of my gimmick. But then he'll also want to turn around and get on the mic and like thank police and first responders and stuff. And it's like, wait a minute. Are you trying to be good? Are you trying to be good to a certain kind of person? Are you sick? Are you maybe not that thrilled with how it feels to be the bad guy all the time when people are hating on you? And maybe you're trying to make a little bit of a turn? And you're right. If he could have just been like, I'm pulling up in a limousine and we got the cameras ready to have Colby Covington get out of the limousine. But first, six women in evening gowns get out.
Yeah.
And then Colby Covington, and everybody would still hate on him and be like, you're clearly paying these women and they can barely stomach to even be close to you, even for the paycheck. Still, they might hate that gimmick so much that it's fun.
Yeah.
Focus is the key, though, because if you just start blasting out stuff in all directions, then people don't know what to make of it, and all they just decide is, fuck this guy.
A little bit more focus is generally good advice in all trades, in all aspects of life, and I don't think Colby Covington is any exception here. I feel like focus, distill the message to something a little bit more clear, would have been great for him, And it's probably the same thing his teachers have been telling him since grade school. I'm just going to hazard a guess. Next question this week comes to us from...
Colby, could it be an A student if he'd just apply himself?
From Stan, who writes, having morphed over the last few years from shit-eating wild man to casual shit-eating wild man, I realize I may not be keeping up with the hottest of MMA goss. So here's my question. Why isn't a Jake versus Nate with Logan versus Nick as a co-main stupor fight, see what he did there?
Yeah, I get it.
Being yelled about if it hasn't already. Thanks. Now, this harkens back a bit to the conversation we just had about Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz and whether or not that fight could possibly come off, because you and I have talked about this a bunch over on the Patreon properties. This is the move. If you can pull it off, boxing main event and co-main event on Showtime or wherever the Paul brothers are plying their wares, brothers versus brothers essentially is what you're doing here. And you sell all the pay-per-views. It doesn't matter how many fights Nate and Nick have lost in the UFC. You get these guys with the big boxing gloves and you're going to have two Diaz brothers fight two Paul brothers. Take everybody's money. You're selling all the pay-per-views. And that, I think, is why Nate wants to get out of his contract, because he knows that.
Are you saying this might be one of those pay-per-views where you have to pre-order it so they don't run out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this one might be the pay-per-view where it makes sense to pre-order it.
See, I'll go a step further and say, you ain't heard this from me, Chad, but psst, they don't even need both brothers. All you really need is Jake Paul and Nate Diaz. That's enough.
Yeah.
That would be enough. You know why? Like, it would fit with the Jake Paul playbook, which is to pick on a fighter who the MMA world knows well, but also maybe pick on them at a time when you might realistically beat them and be able to walk around saying, I'm beating up all these UFC stars. And it would kind of piss the MMA world off, because it'd be like, but you wouldn't beat one in his prime. You wouldn't beat a good one right now. And he would be able to say, fuck you, I don't care, I'm still beating him. And also, you get a guy who actually has an existing fan base, which is not what, this is like, not really what you got when you got Ben Askren and Tyron Woodley. Like, Nate Diaz would bring a lot of his fans over with him, not just the MMA people. And you also would be able to do it with a guy where you say, like, okay, hey, we can stand next to each other and look like we're reasonably the same size. Here's a guy known for his ability to take a lot of punishment when he has to, but also having pretty good hands and having a pretty good just pure boxing game himself. So it seems like a pay-per-view where you're going to see some action. It's going to go a while one way or another. There's going to be a ton of shit talk, and it's going to be two different varieties of shit talk. You're going to generate a lot of interest prior to the bell, as we like to say. But then you're also going to give people a fight that they would look at it on paper and be like, there's a good chance that this ends up being a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, and if you're Nate Diaz, it makes so much sense, like, why you'd be trying to hurry up, get one last fight on the UFC contract and then get out of there, because chances are you're going to go over there with Jake Paul. He's going to be wanting to talk his I'm paying fighters fairly in the UFC isn't bullshit. And you're going to make probably more money than you would in your next three UFC fights just in that one night, you know? It kind of works out for everybody. You don't even absolutely need the Logan Paul, Nick Diaz side of it. And maybe you'd be better off without that side, honestly. Because then I can watch it a little more guilt-free if you don't trot this. You know, we saw what Nick Diaz looked like when he was fighting Robbie Lawler. Didn't look like he super wanted to be there.
Bite your tongue. I think you're probably right. You can probably do it with just Jake and Nate. But how much fun would it be to have the brothers, all four guys on the podium? We're just having fun doing all of our stuff, probably talking about how everybody's on steroids. Everybody in the Paul family is on steroids. And then we show up and we throw some hands. Like, I feel like, you know, your point is well made about Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler. But at the same time, maybe you put Nick out there in a stand up only fight. Maybe he fares a little better.
Or maybe you have both brothers in their brothers' corners hanging around, working up a little bit of future heat. And then if that looks like it can materialize down the road, then you go do a separate pay-per-view of that one. Because I just don't know. First of all, they're all going to want to be paid like headliners, and you're going to have to split the pie then four ways instead of just two ways. And I don't know if you sell so many more pay-per-views adding that extra fight than you do. Because I think people who are going to come, if they heard, you know, Diaz brothers versus Paul brothers, would also still come if it was just Diaz brother singular versus Paul brother singular.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
That's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website comainevent.com and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, though, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Ben, I might have sold Chan Sung Jung a little bit short at the beginning of the show when I said he comes into this fight just 1-1 in his last two dating back to 2019. While that is true, the actual truth is that he has won three of his last four. Most recent victory over Dan Ige, he lost a unanimous decision to Brian Ortega, and before that, back-to-back stoppage wins, first-round stoppage wins over Frankie Edgar and Renato Moicano. Now, in stark contrast to that, however, is Alexander Volkanovski, who we all know has not at least technically lost a fight since 2013, when the granddaddy of them all, the legend himself, Corey Nelson, defeated him by third round TKO at an event called Australian FC 5 down there in Melbourne. Since then, he's been spotless. Obviously had some close ones with Max Holloway, but is nonetheless the reigning undisputed UFC men's 145-pound champion. I want you to pretend you are Chan Sung Jung's head coach. You got the pencil tucked behind your ear.
Mm-hmm.
You got a handkerchief in your back pocket so that you can...
Maybe a towel around my neck?
Yep, you can polish your glasses when you need to, when you're going to dispense some particularly profound wisdom. You like to stand there and polish your glasses while you do it. What do you tell your guy, the Korean zombie, heading into Saturday's fight, will be the most effective and successful stuff for him to do out there?
Well, Zom, I call him Zom.
Yeah, you're close.
We've got a rapport. Well, Zom, you know, the fox knows many tricks. The hedgehog knows one good one. We got to get out there and we got to get in this man's face. We got to make it crazy. We got to make it messy. We got to make it chaotic. We can't let this guy settle into a rhythm, find his footing, and start doing that stuff he does. Because if we do that, he's going to eat you up. He's going to eat you up over the course of five rounds. We can't let him get comfortable. We need to go in there. We need to push that pace. And I need you right up in his grill. Just pressuring him, making him dance to your tune and not the other way around. Now, look, are you going to have to take some blows in order to make that happen? Absolutely you are. Are we going home with the same amount of blood in our bodies that we arrived to the arena with? No, absolutely not. But could you maybe be sitting in that ER getting stitched up as a champion? Yeah. Yeah, you could. But you got to be willing to pay the price.
Wow.
I mean, get out there.
That's inspiring.
Give me 20 from the free throw line and then get hit the showers.
I feel inspired by that. And it sounds very much to me like what you just said is you do you.
More importantly, you do not do Volkanovski. Because that guy, once he gets like seems like he has that sort of Anderson Silva-like ability to take a step back, watch how you're moving, assess what you think you're going to do, and then very quickly come up with a counter to it and then just take you apart. You can't give him that opportunity to do that because it just seems like technically he's so proficient in every area. He's so mentally tough. He's so like athletically sharp and quick and strong that you got to surprise him somehow.
Yeah,
I
said it a couple weeks ago. I think one of the things you know about the city kickboxing guys is that they're going to show up in great shape. They're going to have a really good game plan, and then they're going to go out and do their level best to execute it to the letter. And that's what we've seen Alexander Volkanovski do in this string of victories that he has amassed in the UFC. He's been very, very good. As I said, creeping up now, you know, creeping up on a decade, honestly, since he's lost a fight, which is an awful damn long time to do it in mixed martial arts. As I mentioned, he's got the win over Brian Ortega. Then he had back-to-back good ones with Max Holloway, but, you know, a pair of fights where Alexander Volkanovski emerged victorious. Then you got Jose Aldo, Chad Mendez before that. So a long line of top contenders here for Alexander Volkanovski. Is this a case, though? I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, but is this a case where overrated is not the word, but are we dressing Alexander Volkanovski up to be more impenetrable, more unbeatable than he actually is? Because he does also kind of get sometimes into these fights where it's the classic little guy fight, right? Where everybody's circling around, we're both hitting each other, we're picking each other apart, everything's happening very fast, and depending on which way the judges score it, either guy could come out on top. Is it possible that at some point, I don't know if it's this weekend, but at some point, the way Alexander Volkanovski ends up losing the title is in one of these fights where we're kind of like, I'm not going to argue with the decision, but, you know, it could have gone either way.
I mean, possibly, but I don't know. It's easier for me to imagine a situation where somebody just shocks him, just catches him with a big shot once. And we've seen him in some risky situations where he's been in danger and he's shown an amazing ability to recover. But sometimes, you know, it's not impossible to foresee a situation where somebody gets you in those situations and maybe you're not able to recover that time, or you're not able to recover quick enough, or a ref steps in before you feel like you got a chance to recover. Like, that kind of stuff is easier for me to imagine than just somebody edging him out over the course of five rounds, especially in a fight like this one. I feel like the zombie has a better chance to just get to him early, catch him with something big, and then jump all over him than he does to just win more of the rounds in a five-round title fight.
Now, if you are Alexander Volkanovski's head guy and you're giving him books of poetry in the gym, and having him watch motivational videos, probably listening to some Mozart while you train. Are you telling him, we know what the Korean zombie's going to do out here? He's going to come out here and he's going to try to drag you into his kind of fight. He's gonna act like a wild man. He's going to take the punishment. He's going to try to make this ugly and get you into a brawl. And we don't want that. What we want is an Alexander Volkanovski fight, where we go out there as the better technical striker with the better movement around the cage and the better cardio, and we impose our will a little bit at a time on this guy. We weather that early storm if it comes, and then after that, we make this our fight and we take control. Is that what you're telling Alexander Volkanovski ahead of Saturday night?
Yeah, I'm also telling him, I think, that you know the zombie is going to be there to be hit. Finding him is not going to be the problem. Right. But you also, when you do find him, don't feel like you have to take his head off every single time. Let's just keep touching the guy and keep hammering away at him with the belief that eventually we put him away, or we're just going to build up such a lead on the scorecards. Like, let's not get too excited trying to go out there and finish the guy all at once. Let's go in there mindful that sometimes this guy's been known to be able to take a hell of a lot of punishment, but let's not get too worked up on it, man. Let's find him. Let's hit him. Let's get out of the damn way, and then let's reset and let's do it all again. And if we have to do it all again for 25 minutes, fine. If we can get him out of there earlier than that, great. But we're not going to completely blow our wad trying to finish.
All right, let's go ahead and do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, and then we will move on to round number two. Ben, what you got? What's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week?
Well, I have a confession to make, Chad. I've been thinking about something all weekend after we discussed it on Friday's Power Rankings. And it hasn't sat well with me. Oh. It's been on my mind ever since we discussed it on Friday. I hate to take an item from the Power Rankings and then resurrect it on Monday as an Are You Fucking Kidding Me? But this week, Chad, my Are You Fucking Kidding Me has to go out to the parents of the Iranian Hulk.
Okay. Yeah, this was it was arresting, frankly, to read these quotes from the Iranian Hulk.
Now, we talked about it on the Power Rankings because especially this quote where he talks about how just crushed and devastated he was after being tossed around in like a media face-off by the world's scariest man. And to make that even worse, the shame he has faced from his family in Iran, quote, "I cannot call my family. When I returned to Iran, I didn't go to my family. I can't. I can't talk to my father. When I talked to my mother, she said, the person I saw in that video was not my son. My son is way stronger than this." You know what, you guys? Maybe you need to learn how to support the Iranian Hulk rather than just making him feel bad when he already feels shitty.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? Let's lift the man up. Let's not stomp on his neck.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the people you can depend on. His family, goddammit. You know what? You don't deserve an Iranian Hulk in your family if that's how you're going to treat him.
Yeah.
There, I said it.
Yeah. You fucking kidding me?
I
mean, you can call a guy the Iranian Hulk, but that does not mean he's made of stone. Right? This Hulk has feelings.
If you prick the Iranian Hulk, does he not bleed?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm right there with you. It's not my son out there. Can I just read you a story, Ben Folks?
Oh, please.
This is Tim Bissell wrote this one over there on Bloody Elbow. And I was trying to figure out what my Are You Fucking Kidding Me was gonna be this week. I almost have nothing to add to this. Freestyle wrestler and two-time Olympic medalist Sushil Kumar, 38, has been in jail in New Delhi since May 23rd, 2021. He has been charged with murdering fellow wrestler Sagar Dhankar, sometimes referred to as Sagar Dhankar or Sagar Rama, 23, on May 4th on the grounds of the famous Chhatrasal Stadium. Kumar, who was once one of India's most celebrated solo athletes, is trying to get out on bail while he awaits trial over the killing. However, Delhi police are trying to make sure that doesn't happen. According to the Times of India, police wrote in a status report that Kumar is a quote-unquote kingpin, and that if he was released, witnesses would be at risk of intimidation. In their report, police claimed that witnesses in this case are quote-unquote terrified of Kumar and his associates. Police also stated that Kumar is a globetrotter who might flee the country if he's let out in jail. Numerous motives regarding the killing of Dhankar have been floating in the Indian press, most of which quote investigators who are working on the case. Most of these theories are that Kumar and Dhankar became enemies after Dhankar stopped paying rent on an apartment Kumar owned. This led to Kumar evicting Dhankar. Additionally, Dhankar has decided to leave Kumar's Chhatrasal-based wrestling team and start his own rival stable. Another theory is that their fallout involves a love triangle involving a mysterious Ukrainian woman. All these theories led to Dhankar allegedly bad-mouthing Kumar around the New Delhi wrestling scene. Police say this led to Kumar wanting to punish Dhankar. Investigators claim Kumar arranged a group of men to abduct Dhankar and his friends and bring them to the Chhatrasal Stadium. At the facility, Dhankar and his friends were beaten with wooden sticks. Dhankar, who was the main target of the assault, did not survive the beating. One of the attackers filmed the assault on their cell phone. The video is now in possession of the police. Are you fucking kidding me? This is some of the craziest shit I have ever read, and I didn't even get to the part about how Kumar once ran a toll booth company with the help of the nephew of a noted crime boss in New Delhi.
Wow, there's a lot going on there.
It's a lot going on. Are you fucking kidding me? That's just some crazy shit right there.
Also, I have to note that these two theories about how the rift develop are very different.
Mm-hmm.
One is like didn't pay his rent, and the other one is love triangle with mysterious Ukrainian woman. Those aren't even close to being like the same kind of explanation.
Like I said, man, I got nothing to add. You fucking kidding me? You fucking kidding me with this shit? That's gonna do it for round number one. We'll be right back. Round number two.
Jed, I would like to begin round two with an image. I want you to close your eyes. I want you to think back to that moment we've all seen. It was captured as a still photograph that has popped up as an occasional MMA meme. I want you to picture Peter Yan standing there, having just been disqualified for his illegal knee on a downed Aljamain Sterling's head. And I want you to picture the look on the man's face as he raised his fist triumphantly. Now, imagine this same Peter Yan coming into this weekend's title fight where he is, you know, the interim champion, but also still considers himself pretty much the real champion against Aljamain Sterling, who's been hanging around with that belt trying to get his neck right. Say you're that Peter Yan. Do you still feel as triumphant as you did right in that moment? Do you feel like maybe you learned anything? Or do you feel like you're just going to go out there and treat it like, you know what? You got a brief reprieve in this beatdown I was about to put on you, and now it resumes. Or are we looking at a brand new fight here?
Can I open my eyes?
Open your eyes.
Okay. I mean, if you're Peter Yan, right, we know how these guys think. We know how these fighters justify things to themselves and maintain their confidence and explain things away and prepare themselves for battle. If you're Peter Yan, you're out there, you got your interim title, but you're out there, you're probably telling yourself this Aljamain Sterling character can't hold your jock strap. That's probably what you're telling yourself in your own mind brain and the people in your gym, and that you're going to go out there and make this into a Peter Yan fight where the other guy just slowly gets beaten into the living daylights. Just one of the most painful things that seems like can happen to a man who weighs approximately 135 pounds is that he gets into a fight with Peter Yan. And that, I assume, is what you want to do to Aljamain Sterling. We know another thing about how these MMA fighter guys think too, man, and that's that Peter Yan probably blames Aljamain Sterling for this. Peter Yan probably blames Aljamain Sterling for running around with what Peter Yan considers to be an illegitimate title, and now you're going to make him pay for it. Whether any of that is a reflection of actual reality, I guess we'll find out on Saturday. But if you're Peter Yan, that's definitely what you're telling yourself.
Yeah. Now, we talked before about Corey Sandhagen had some interesting advice for Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, basically don't being do like, you.
Don't do you. At least don't do the version of you we saw in that last fight. Because it was a little bit of a frenetic pace he seemed to be trying to set. And it did seem like it was really beginning to take its toll on him. And it looked like he was starting to run out of gas a little bit. And then Peter Yan was putting on. But it also seemed like, at least what surprised me in that first fight was, you're looking at Aljamain Sterling thinking his best path here is to drag you down and nab an opportunistic submission once you're trying to scramble back to your feet. And Peter Yan seemed to surprise him with some of those creative foot sweeps that were putting Aljamain Sterling on his back there. Do you come in, if you're Aljamain, with a different game plan here? Are you thinking, you know what, maybe I don't need to sell out so hard trying to get a takedown, or maybe I also need to set a different kind of pace than I did in that first fight?
Yeah, I mean, Aljamain Sterling, I think quite rightly, probably deserves a little bit more respect headed into this fight. It did seem like he was probably en route to a decision loss against Peter Yan in their first fight before Peter Yan, as I like to say, broke the rules so bad they took his title away from him and gave it to the other guy. None of which is your fault, by the way, if you're Aljamain Sterling. But Aljamain Sterling, Ben, has officially won 6 fights in a row. He beat Corey Sandhagen. He beat Pedro Munhoz. He beat Jimmy Rivera. He's beaten a handful of other bantamweight notables in his UFC career. He's a good damn fighter. And people are kind of acting like, number one, where we are doing the MMA industry thing of blaming the guy who got fouled, which we always do and never ceases to amaze me. But people are also just sort of acting like the guy sucks. And like maybe he's been ducking Peter Yan because he has had some injury mishaps and some surgeries during this layoff. And that probably makes you mad too if you're Aljamain Sterling. Like, again, speaking about motivation heading into this thing, there's no shortage of it. If you're Aljamain Sterling and you are the champion, officially the undisputed champion, and you look at the odds and you're like plus 350 or whatever. Now, the question of how to actually get a win against Peter Yan could be a little bit of a tricky deal. But, you know, Aljamain Sterling, he will be well prepared for this, as we know. He's going to have a good game plan. And I think you're right. Probably learned a lot of stuff from the first fight. And if you can come into a situation where you don't slow down quite as much, you don't gas out, maybe you do, in fact, conserve your energy a little bit different. And you not only solve the foot sweeps, but you try to figure out how to impose a little bit more of your own wrestling game and or clinch game and or, dirty boxing tactics, things like that. Maybe you can have a different outcome. I don't know. I think it's in my heart of hearts, it's probably right to expect a Peter Yan victory here. But at the same time, I don't think Aljamain Sterling is as far out of it as people think.
Yeah. Okay. How about this, though, as a variable? Aljamain Sterling hasn't fought since this fight with Peter Yan a little over a year ago. Has dealt with the neck stuff since then. You know, some kind of serious neck stuff, and had to delay this fight because he's trying to get back to where he felt like he needed to be after having neck surgery to address this chronic issue. To go through all that, come back after not fighting for a year, and have to get in there with Peter Yan? That seems tough, man. That seems like some stuff kind of piling up against you.
Yeah, it's a tough ask for sure. It's a difficult mission for anybody who is at the top of their game, who has been fighting frequently and is in a real rhythm, to come up and fight Peter Yan. Nobody that we have seen has really beaten him at the highest level. Like prior to his disqualification loss to Aljamain Sterling in their last fight, I don't think he had lost since 2016, and he had not lost at all in the UFC. And oh, by the way, while Aljamain Sterling was out having his physical issues, Peter Yan kind of beat the brakes off Corey Sandhagen. So he's out here pretty much rolling. And like I said at the beginning of the round, of course, going to come into this fight brimming with confidence. And Aljamain Sterling has had a little bit of a tougher road. So I think it's probably right that he is the underdog. I don't know if he would see it that way. But he probably, you know, rightly or wrongly, he has something to prove, I think, in this fight. And he's also, probably didn't expect this protracted absence because of injury and surgeries and things like that. But that's also, you know, as much as I can't criticize the guy for it, like that's the hand you deal yourself when you get the title via DQ, right? You're gonna have to fight this guy again. And in this case, you kind of, I don't want to say set yourself up for this, but like took the title at a time when you immediately had all these kind of setbacks in your career. So it's going to be tough for him, I think, in this fight, but I don't know what he could have done to make it transpire otherwise at this point.
Yeah.
Which one of these three fights do you think is going to be the most competitive? Just to ask, because I feel like the picture that we're painting for Chan Sung Jung is a little bit of a long shot. We have said that we would put money on Gilbert Burns against Khamzat Chimaev. We will talk more about that fight coming up in round number three. But at the same time, like, is Aljamain Sterling versus Peter Yan the one that has the chance to be the most competitive?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially if Aljamain Sterling shows up really ready to fight with no signs of rust or signs that he's not fully recovered and back to where he wanted to be after the neck surgery stuff. Because it was fairly competitive the first time, you know, right up until Peter Yan cheated so bad they took his belt away. But I think once somebody like Aljamain Sterling, I think, will benefit from having that first fight experience, that having felt what Peter Yan has to offer and having a chance to kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit. I think while I still favor Peter Yan because of just a host of issues from, you know, this tough stuff that is sort of check marks against Aljamain Sterling coming in here, but also just because Peter Yan is really fucking good.
Yeah.
I still think that it's going to be a pretty competitive fight. I don't think he goes in there and just absolutely steamrolls him.
Yeah, it's hard to pick Aljamain Sterling here just because, like you said, I think a lot of it comes down to what version of Aljamain Sterling we get out there in the cage. And additionally to that, the question of can the best Aljamain Sterling, even if that's what we get, beat the best Peter Yan? Which it's tough to forecast. Although on a personal note, I would feel a lot of satisfaction. Like I don't dislike either of these two guys. I like to watch both of them fight, but just the way Aljamain Sterling has been treated in the wake of that fight with Peter Yan, it would be kind of satisfying to see him win this fight and become the actual undisputed champion.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. As a gentleman of a certain age, I have to ask.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Here we go. Jesus Christ.
Do you take a multivitamin?
You know, honestly, my answer is sometimes. When I remember.
Well, you should. You should be doing it every day. I'll tell you what I've been doing the last couple weeks. Drinking AG1 from Athletic Greens. I wake up in the morning. I put a scoop of it in some water. I shake it up in the handy shaker that they sent me in the mail with my order, and then I drink it down. With AG1, you get 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, and probiotics to help you start your day right. It supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus. It helps with the aging process. You know, all the things a couple of old guys like us need a little help with. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, or really any artificial anything, and it still tastes pretty good, too. Tons of people take some kind of multivitamin, and it's important to choose one with high-quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. It costs less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than that gas station coffee you like to drink. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D, which I also take, and 5 free travel packs of AG1 with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CME. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/CME to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
You had me with helps with the aging process.
Yeah, we're looking for anything at this point that'll help with the old aging process. I'll be.
You know what I could use some help with? It's the aging process.
Well, let's talk about a couple of these young whippersnappers out there. Kamzat Chimaev. And I guess the 35-year-old Gilbert Burns. They're going to do the damn thing at 170 pounds. This is, not the main event or the co-main event of UFC 273, but definitely a fight that people are going to be stoked to see, interested to see, perhaps the biggest test of Kamzat Chimaev's young UFC career. We talked about the odds at the top of the show. I don't know whether Gilbert Burns is going to win this thing. Probably. Kamzat Chimaev gets it done, but at the same time, do you take a flyer on this if you got $20 you never want to see again? Because it's not every day you can get +350 or whatever it is on a guy like Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, first of all, I had to go and fact check it when you said Gilbert Burns was 35, because I thought, no, that can't be right. Gilbert Burns,
he's a youthful 35. Probably been drinking his Athletic Greens.
He's got a real joie de vivre for a 35-year-old, but sure enough, it checks out. I guess I'm trying to picture in my mind brain how it looks for Kamzat Chimaev to go out there and run right over Gilbert Burns the way odds makers seem to think he will. And what we've seen so far from Kamzat Chimaev is just go right at people, grab them, put your hands on them, Scotty, ragdoll them. Just be draped all over them and overwhelm them with force, power, pace, and pretty soon they give you something. And by pretty soon, very quickly, without them getting a chance to do much offense at all.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to picture him doing that to Gilbert Burns.
It is hard, and it'll be impressive if he is able to do it. I think that it's meaningful that the UFC and some of the other top fighters in this sport, frankly, treat Kamzat Chimaev with this reverence. Like, they're not doing it for no reason. And guys like Dana White, as much grief as he gets, for stuff that he deserves to get grief over. But he's seen a lot of fighters. He's seen a lot of fights. It's kind of his job, been his job his entire adult life. And same with Sean Shelby and Mick Maynard. And so for the UFC to treat Khamzat Chimaev the way that it treats him is meaningful to me. It means I don't expect that he will turn out to be anything besides the real deal. However, I will say, we haven't seen a ton from the guy yet, man. And just knowing the multitude of different ways that things can go wrong for you in mixed martial arts, and frankly, the multitude of different ways we have seen prospects flounder, not turn out to be the thing that they were supposed to be over the years in this sport, I still need to see a lot more evidence and a lot more complete evidence from Khamzat Chimaev before I will anoint him, you know, the next big thing, the thing that he is supposed to be. Guy's never been out of the second round in his mixed martial arts career. His last three fights, remember Li Jingliang, which was impressive that he took out Jingliang as quickly and easily as he did. Gerald Meerschaert in a fight where Meerschaert was coming in, I believe, off COVID, and Chimaev knocked him out in 17 seconds. And before that, Reese McKee, a guy who was, you know, relatively touted out of Ireland, I believe. But again, Chimaev took care of him in the first round. So, like, I kind of want to see Khamzat Chimaev have a fucking three-round back-and-forth war where he gets tested on multiple levels and we see what his cardio is like and we see what he is like in the third round when the chips are down and you got to do something to win the fight. And then maybe I will become a believer. And I guess I'm holding out a little bit of hope that Gilbert Burns is a guy who might be able to bring that out of him, because Gilbert Burns, you know, despite the fact that he had his own championship opportunity that he was unable to cash in on, but Gilbert Burns has been really good for a long time in this sport, and we just saw him take care of the Wonder Boy last July in a three-round unanimous decision. So if nothing else, I would love to see Gilbert Burns take Khamzat Chimaev into water deeper than we have seen him in thus far, so we can all get a better read on exactly what Khamzat Chimaev brings to the table in a fight like that, because we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Okay, how about this? Let's say Khamzat Chimaev goes out there and ragdolls Gilbert fucking Burns the way he has everybody else. Like, he's over there picking him up, slamming him down, talking to Dana White as he is setting up the finish.
Yeah.
Will you come out of that one and be like, all right, you know what? The hype was all real. Everything they said was true. This guy really is the anointed one. And let's just go right ahead, book him a title fight, but also let's start preparing for the Khamzat Chimaev era in MMA. Will you be completely sold if he goes out there and if it really is a one-sided fight and against, you know, a guy who seemed like he was one or two punches away from becoming the champ himself not too long ago?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if he runs through Gilbert Burns again, that will be another impressive accolade to add to the resume of Khamzat Chimaev, and it'll be the most impressive thing that he's done thus far in the UFC. And if he does it in 17 seconds or 3 minutes or whatever it is, more power to him. But at the same time, that will leave questions on the table. Like, you know, we've seen people have long careers in this sport until they get tested in a certain kind of way. It's, you know, it's happened to some of the best known, most popular champions that we've seen in this sport, that they've been able to achieve such dominance and such success in the sport that we don't see them really get tested by anyone until the one contender comes up who can do it. And then we get those answers. And it could be that Khamzat Chimaev is that kind of guy. But, you know, I've just seen it go wrong for too many people in too many different ways. And the sport is too diverse and it's too hard. And there's too many different factors that can all come together to provide a complete picture of an MMA fighter for me to really start treating Khamzat Chimaev like he's fucking magic just yet. Like, he's really, really good. We've seen that. But, like, is he really good in minute 14? Is he really, really good in minute 24? We don't know, because we haven't got there yet. And I would like to see it, frankly.
Is he really good maybe once Gilbert Burns laces a right hand upside his head?
Yeah, see, we haven't seen him react to any adversity. We haven't seen him in a long fight. Have we seen him get out of a submission? Have we seen him in a fight where somebody takes him down? Like, I don't know, man. So I don't have any reason to doubt that Khamzat Chimaev is the person that he's been billed as by the UFC. But at the same time, like, show it to me first. And then I guess I will start believing it.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, let's go ahead and do just saying stuff, and then we can get out of here for this week. Ben, I did not watch WrestleMania, but I did.
Oh, no.
I did see some videos. It's two nights. It's just a big. That's a big commitment from your boy. But I did see some videos of Logan Paul seemingly effortlessly pulling off the Three Amigos vertical suplex spot, and I saw some videos of Pat McAfee out here hitting his own superplex and, you know, flipping off the top rope and jumping from the floor of the ring up to the top turnbuckle. And I saw some reportage about Wee Man from Jackass out here body slamming Sami Zayn.
I'm sorry, you referred to that as reportage.
Okay. Reportage. And then I saw Vince McMahon hilariously botch the Stone Cold Stunner in a way that will be looked at and puzzled over for generations. I guess I'm just saying, pretend you're pro wrestling for a second. You're cool, right? But you're out here competing for eyeballs with legitimate competitive sports. You're out here with MMA, with boxing, with now bare knuckle boxing and celebrity boxing and everything else. If you're pro wrestling, is it really a good idea to have these totally untrained amateurs show up and look like they might be incredible fucking pro wrestlers? I mean, I know Pat McAfee, former NFL player, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Logan Paul also has his own legitimate amateur sports background. These guys are athletes. I know what they're doing. But if you're pro wrestling, is that really a good look? Meanwhile, 76-year-old Vince McMahon can't even job the damn stunner. I'm not trying to kill anybody's joy here, but does it undermine pro wrestling if Logan Paul looks like he could go out there and immediately have a 45-minute work rate match with Daniel Bryan? Should you really be making Pat McAfee look like he could be Intercontinental Champion tomorrow? Doesn't it kind of undermine the idea that pro wrestlers are themselves great athletes and trained professionals? I mean, not to sound like grumpy-ass Ole Anderson or anything, Ben, but don't you have to protect the business? Just a little bit. Just a little bit. I'm just saying.
Just saying. You're saying maybe we shouldn't make it look like anybody can roll up in here and do this shit.
I'm saying I would come to the production meetings and be like, Logan, could you look a little less good? Could you just look a little less, you know, like you could do all this shit? Could you suck just a little more on your first time out?
I'm going to have to turn it around on you. Isn't one of the things you were saying about Jake Paul, Logan's brother, that, well, sure, he should be able to get good at boxing because it's not like he has anything else to do.
That's true.
It's not like he's got to get these kids off to school. It's not like he's got to, like, you know, old man Roberts at the office is busting his hump about the quarterly reports. No, he doesn't have anything else to do, man. He can just train, just do this. Isn't the same true for Logan?
Do you think that's what he's been doing, though?
I don't want to speculate about the day-to-day life of one Logan Paul.
I'm going to dress like fucking Bumblebee from the Transformers, and then I'm going to come out and I'm going to have a five-star classic. I don't know. I mean, hey, if Logan Paul has been out there putting in the work in a fucking Quonset hut with a ring set up in it and some of the finest trainers in the biz for months, and this is just his coming out party, more power to him. I kind of doubt it. I think he's probably...
I don't know. I saw the clip. It doesn't look like you roll off the couch and do that.
Well, he's in good shape. The guy's a freaking athlete. He's probably been training in boxing, but, you know, he might have been taking mushrooms with Instagram influencers for all I know. Then he'd put doing that more than putting in work in the wrestling ring.
Hey, there's 24 hours in a day. There's time to do a lot of stuff.
It was, you know, fucking great, however, when Vince McMahon botched the stunner so bad that Stone Cold Steve Austin just laughed. Laughed his ass off about how terrible it was.
And it seemed to be a laugh of pure joy from what I saw.
For sure.
Unbridled joy. Well, Chad, this week, I'm just saying, reading here a headline off of MMA Junkie, 49ers legend Frank Gore to make pro boxing debut for Jorge Masvidal's Game Bread Promotions.
Yeah. He had a fight before, right?
Frank Gore? Did. I believe it was an amateur fight on the Jake Paul Tyron Woodley card. I think he lost a very close decision in a kind of crazy-ass four-round exhibition match, but said that, you know, maybe he would want to do a little more boxing after that. Now, he's supposed to be signing like one of those one-day contracts with the San Francisco 49ers so that he can retire as a member of the team. Jed, this story notes he is third in total rushing yards for a 16-year NFL career. He rushed for exactly 16,000 yards, which there's a that you ought to get an award just for that, just for finishing with a round number. Behind only Walter Payton and Emmett fucking Smith. Third place behind those two guys. Pretty good company.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
And then you're going to retire and box for Jorge Masvidal's fight promotion in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, why though? Why?
It's got it in his veins, man. It's in his blood.
We didn't want to like maybe wait around for something. We decided like, okay, Jorge Masvidal's got a show in Jackson, Mississippi. Well, that sounds like everything is going to be totally on the up and up. The guy was just sucker punching people outside the Poppy Steak. Let me get on that fight card. Let me just roll right up in there from my incredibly successful, highly decorated NFL career. Put on those boxing gloves, go to work in front of a crowd of like 5,000 people in Jackson, Mississippi. Why though? I'm just saying.
Just saying. Wow. Okay. That's going to do it for this week's co-main event podcast. We will be over at the Patreon page, patreon.com/co-main event all week, serving up nothing but the extreme hotness for you guys. Just hit after hit after hit. It's like the fucking Chronic. It's like you're listening to the first Notorious B.I.G. album. Every track's a banger over at the Patreon. Costs $1 to get in the door for the live chat on Wednesday. Don't hate yourself. Treat yourself. Come on over. Join the Patreon. Patreon.com/co-main event. As for right now, though, thanks everybody for listening. We are done. We are through. We are out.
I mean, when I saw Logan Paul out there, the guy has some hops. I give him that. You can't take that away from him, Jack. That's just natural athleticism. The guy can get up there.
No, those guys look great. Those guys look great. I guess that's what you want to do. Produce some WrestleMania. I'm saying.
What you want is a
pro wrestler. I don't know.
You want to harken back to the good old days of Kane sending Pete Rose off on a stretcher.
I want, Lou Fez to break Logan Paul's arm on the first day of training. He's like, yeah, kid, I'll teach you how to be a pro wrestler. And